There's only one road into Key West, but you won't believe where it can take you. Travel back in time to a city rich with history. Discover amazing artists and musicians. Taste seafood fresh off the boat. Or just kick back and soak up the island vibe. For more about Key West and the latest safety protocols, visit flakeys.com. Key West, close to perfect, far from normal.
Well, hello there, gentle listeners, and welcome to the AFA podcast, the official podcast of animationforadults.com, the blog for the adult animation aficionado. I'm Chris, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Hey, and by Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
And last, but by no means least, Yvonne.
Hey, doing well.
Okay, so we should start with some introductions about how we got into animation and how we came to AFA. And so, Dan.
Hi, yeah, sure. Well, I am an animator by trade. I'm actually a storyboard artist right now. I got into animation just through school, through drawing. So yeah, I went to animation school and I became an animator, and I got involved with the site after I started hanging around a bit more with film critics. I've always been a really big film buff and enjoyed analyzing films. And hanging around with film critics, I realized that that was something that I was really interested in. So I started trying to write, and I started writing for Animation for Adults after I got in touch with Chris, and I said, I'm an animator by trade, and I look at animated films from a little bit more of the point of view of an animator sometimes, and he seemed interested in that point of view. And I started writing, and I went to see Song of the Sea at an advanced screening. Yeah, and the next thing I wrote was a review for Princess Kaguya, and I have lots more articles on the way.
as Chris knows.
but yeah, that's pretty much about it for me.
Cool. Rachel?
Oh, goodness, where to start? Well, I am currently trying to make a career out of writing, because it's been a primary passion of mine for a long time. I've always been very big into stories of all different shapes and sizes and different medias, like, you know, starting with reading, and then I became really enamored with film, and I just really got introduced into animation, you know, through Disney, Warner Brothers and all that, but I never really understood, like, really grasped what kind of different stories could be told with animation until I actually started watching various Japanese animation coming over, being aired in the UK via Toonami, which is, you know, you got to see all different kinds of stuff about that, and so I got really into writing about, you know, Japanese animation and that kind of stuff. So by the time I came to college and went to be a film, film concentration with an English major, I would start writing about, like, that various entertainment in our college newspaper, and even end up getting an internship with a group called Common Sense Media, which is about kind of bridging the gap between, you know, parents and their kids and trying to, you know, find, you know, basically talk about different TV shows, books, etc., about, you know, what kind of content is in there, and, you know, having parents make the decision about, you know, what to share with their kids based on that information. Unfortunately, that didn't pan out to anything, and I'm still trying to see if I can make a career in writing about entertainment, particularly animation, since it's a primary passion of mine. So I got in touch with Chris because I actually met him via writing and blogging, I guess that's the proper word. On another site about video games. I think, was it Rebel Gaming was what it was originally called?
Yeah, originally, but then someone else had that name, apparently.
Yeah, that was a bit of a confusing trying to get that off the ground. And but we wrote for that a little while, and, you know, he did a lot of editing there, so that's how he got introduced to my work. And then I had to drop out after a while because I had to a lot of real life issues to tackle. But when he, I saw on Twitter, when I joined Twitter, that he was doing the animation for adults, and I was looking at the site and thought this would be a good thing, a good way to keep my skills sharp and still, you know, and a good outlet for writing about what I really want to write about. So while I look for my proper career path, so here I am, and I will continue to do as much writing as I can about whatever I can, whatever really captures my imagination.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so I was never actually particularly interested in being a writer, especially. I've always liked writing, but it wasn't my... I never thought of becoming a writer as a profession, because right from when I was little, I just wanted to be an animator or a cartoonist. And as soon as I could pick up a pen, I was drawing stuff. And I always used to like draw birthday cards for friends and family and everything like that. And that was all I ever wanted to do. And when it came to university, I did radio, film and TV studies. But the reason I chose that particular course was because there was the option of doing an animation module in the second and third year. So I chose that, and in the animation module I learned how to do Flash, and you also study animation like from a academic sort of thing, the history and everything. And I fell even more in love with animation during that, and it was pretty much all I wanted to do. But what actually happened was I was stuck in a retail job for years, and then one day a friend of mine who worked there decided to set up a website, and it was called Screen Highway, and he asked me if I'd be interested in writing animation content for it. And so we had this section on the website called Animation Avenue, and I did basically animation content for that. And the first thing I did was reviewed a film called Chico and Rita that he actually asked me to review, and that is actually now the first post on animationforadults.com. And basically, as I was writing, people started to say to me that perhaps that was something that I should consider doing, like family and friends and things. And during that time, I found out about a new anime magazine that was starting in the UK called My M Magazine. And I basically sent off some samples to them, and they gave me a shot, and they let me write for the magazine. And since then, I've been writing for it. Like, I've been in almost every issue, and it's up to, I think, issue 41 now, which is quite unusual in this modern era to be able to start a magazine. And it actually got bought by the MCM Expo group, so it's doing pretty well, I think. Wow. But what happened with Screen Highway was, the guy who ran it, he didn't have time to do it anymore, so he let it expire. But I was happy with the work I did, so I wanted to get it back up somewhere else. And I thought, hey, why give it to someone else when I could put it up for myself? So I basically started a blog that was like what I've always wanted to read, because I thought there was kind of a gap in the market for a particular type of animation blog that sort of just treats it like film. I mean, there's lots of anime sites, and there's lots of Western animation sites, but there's not many that sort of treat all animation as equal. And that is basically how Animation for Adults got started. And gradually over time, the first person I heard from was Dan, and then after that, I think the second person who got in touch with me was Chelsea. She is awesome as well. And then Rachel, who I worked with on Rebel Gaming, which became Killstreak Media, which was a title I was never very keen on.
No, neither was I.
And also came on board was JJ, who was another person who wrote with us at the same site, who's another great writer.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of great writers from my other blogging adventures around there. And then next came on with Jill, who's also not here today, but hopefully will be in the podcast in the future. And Yvonne came on in quite an interesting way, because she actually got in touch about doing an interview, and I had recently had an email from someone at the Academy in New York who wanted to know if we'd like to send someone along to some animation events at the Academy, and I thought, yes, I'd love to, but I'm in England, and Dan's in England, and Rachel's not in New York, and JJ's not in New York. I don't know what to do. Jill's not in New York. And I just mentioned in passing, oh, I'm looking for a writer in New York. And Yvonne said, hey, maybe I could do that. And I said, really? She said, yes. And yeah.
That's the delay, is it, yeah. From the UK to the...
Yeah. It's the satellite delay. It was by email, but never mind. We won't let, you know, accuracy spoil a good story. And yeah. And so that was how the team came together. And I think I'm really pleased with how the website is coming along. Because the thing that really makes me happy is the fact that I get so much stuff from people who are actually animators themselves, who really appreciate what we're doing. And, you know, some of our followers are famous voice actors or Oscar-winning directors. No, Oscar-nominated directors, sorry. Double Oscar-nominated directors.
That's as good as a win, really.
Yeah.
Yes. Really. Yeah. As far as animation's concerned at this point, but we can get into that later.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the story of how Animation for Adults got started and how we all came together. So, Yvonne, how did you get started?
How did I get started in animation?
Yeah.
Well, I got started in animation through sort of like a windy series of events. It's kind of really a New York story in a lot of ways. Initially, I studied painting and drawing. But, you know, once I was in New York City, I got a job. I had a number of jobs in New York. But I worked for this artist named Christina Vergano. Actually, she's wonderful work. And, you know, she hired me to help her sort of like get ready for a show. This is, a long time ago when I had first been in New York City for a little while. After her show, she said, you know, my husband has an architecture firm. You know, he really needs help in the office if you want to file slides. So I did. And, you know, after I started working for him, I wound up, after filing the slides, he sort of set me up with a computer, and I became his executive assistant. And during that time, I started doing some website development and taught myself how to use Flash and just kind of worked around with little things. So I'd never really used a computer before. Seriously or focused on it. So I did AutoCAD for him, and I don't know, it was something about the AutoCAD and that sort of infinite virtual space that contrasted with the background I had in narrative figurative painting. It was just such a wonderful thing. You know, you're sort of, you know, you're limited to the size of the canvas when you're painting and drawing. And I was doing these really narrative figurative work that told stories. And then suddenly there was this whole other medium that I could utilize. So I worked in Flash. I did AutoCAD for a while, and did some 3D stuff, you know, after the AutoCAD, and that was really fascinating. I started teaching myself how to use 3D Studio Max and I don't know. I mean, I realized I wasn't going to be an architect, and had at that point gotten pretty good at the Flash stuff, like good enough. At that time, you know, it was sort of the beginning of when Flash was really taking over and those annoying pop-up messages were happening all the time. Like, I helped create those. I helped create those. But anyway, it was great for – we also did eye details and stuff. So there was movement, but it wasn't involved. It was really just a matter of things moving on and off, you know, the screen. And, you know, it's funny, like, during that whole time, you know, I wasn't really doing animation. I was just kind of utilizing this medium basically to earn a living, you know. And it was a living that wasn't, you know, it was an alternative to waiting tables, you know, which is what I was doing before. I was painting and waiting tables, you know, before the architecture firm. Or, you know, I worked for the artist, for that artist, you know, after I'd waited tables. But, you know, it was just one of those New York things where you just do whatever you can to get by in the city. But yeah, I mean, at one point when I was doing the Flash stuff, I was trying to model and, you know, doing the 3D Max stuff on the side too. I thought, you know, it'd be great to, I was still doing sketches at home too, you know, sort of working on narratives. And I thought it would be great to try and animate some of this stuff. I mean, I have had a couple characters in mind and I had actually modeled a couple characters. And then when I went to start, I thought, you know, I have no idea how to do this. I have no idea how to do any kind of character animation. Not really, you know. I mean, moving things on a screen is not animation. So I signed up for Animation Mentor, and they've been around a few years by that time. And I was following the student work, and the work that came out of there was just wonderful. You know, it was really lovely. And I was, you know, by that time working for WebMD, doing the Flash stuff. So there was, you know, it was a pretty lucrative job, and I was able to, you know, pay for the program, no problem. But once I really started studying animation, you know, it's a difficult art form, you know, it's a different art form. And I could draw, but I didn't, you know, I'm not a, there are animators who really, really can draw, you know what I mean? I'm an all right drafts person, but and body mechanics and the 12 principles and all of that, you know, just learning sort of all of that for the very first time. And it's almost as though you just dig this big hole for yourself once you're hooked, you know, and it's like the more you learn, the deeper the hole gets, you know what I mean? Like it's sort of, it's just such a difficult thing to do, but addictive and wonderful. And everyone that I've met since Animation Mentor have been terrific. I mean, I really felt like I sort of met my clan, you know, and it's just been a terrific time. And so since then, yeah, I've been doing, since I finished the Animation Mentor program, I have to plug them again, and the Animals and Creatures program, and then I went back and took refresher classes. Eventually, some of that, and I mean, it still kind of is, you know what I mean? And you know, as you all probably know, it's once you really start getting into animation, you just continue to learn and improve and move forward, you know. But yeah, that's my story. So I've been doing that for a living now for a number of years, doing freelance stuff, working around different studios in New York City, and now in the last couple of years, you know, actually working. I have my own little, you know, one-person studio in Queens that I do a lot of work out of. Yep.
That's Ice Nair.
Yeah.
Who you should all check out, by the way.
Wow, that's the dream, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Having your own studio, it's amazing.
Well, I mean, it's what, you know, it's young, and but I'm, you know, I'm doing it. I'm able to get by and support myself, and you know, which is kind of a big deal.
It really is. It takes such a long time to get to that stage.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And this program that I'm in now, you know, I'm currently in Edinburgh for the Edinburgh International Film Festival Animation Lab, was fantastic because I just met a ton of other people, 18 or 17 other animators, directors, producers that are all doing the same thing at different levels for different, you know, number of years. They're all professionals though. And it was, like I said, it was very validating because, yeah, we're all just trying to make, you know, good work and you know, keep clients happy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what everyone's trying to do. No matter how, like how big your studio is or how big your position is, everyone's just trying to make it work.
Right. And everyone's really passionate, you know, they're all really passionate about the art form, which, you know, happens when you get hooked. I mean, and there's a real sense of empathy, you know, I mean, someone made a joke, one of the participants in the program, you know, that, you know, the animation lab, it's, it's a very safe place. Like, no one's going to be hurt here. Like, nothing dangerous is going to happen, you know, because it's just sort of the nature of the animator, I think. I mean, you know how much work is being put into even the smallest project, you know, because everyone wants to do the best job that they can. And there's something about that that sort of brings everyone together. You know, you want to include everyone, and you want to and learn from them. You know that there are things to learn. So it's been kind of magical.
Cool. Okay, now we should go on to talk a bit about what's been going on in the world of animation news recently.
There's been a bunch recently.
Oh, yeah.
There's been quite a lot of trailers recently have come out. And we're going to talk about them a bit. So, is there any trailer in particular that anyone's seen that they really stood out to them?
The Peanuts, hands down.
That's the standout.
It was taking me back to watching those old cartoons, even though it's, you know, you can still tell it's definitely like the three-dimensional animation. They're doing their damnedest to make it look as, you know, as similar to the original cartoons, at least in this new art form, as much as they can. So it still feels like you're getting the heart and the soul of the Peanuts on screen.
I'm going to change who I am and become a winner. Charlie Brown? Snoopy, what would I do without a good friend like you? She likes to dance!
The Peanuts movie.
The dog just loves you for who you are. It's nice to have someone that will listen to you.
I saw that at the Blue Sky event, and I thought it was wonderful. Yeah, I love the sort of hand-drawn look that the faces have, and it has a sort of softness. I don't know how to describe it, but an appeal. I'd like to see the movie, but I was actually really, really worried that I kind of wouldn't want to when I saw it. Like, I was sort of putting off seeing the trailer. Like, I wasn't watching it online or anything, you know, because I was just a little bit worried. But it looks fantastic. Yeah.
I think Blue Sky are a lot better than the Ice Age movies, basically.
They've yeah. come a long way. They've come a long way with their anime, their movies, I think.
But the animation itself has always been really good, but that's even gotten, it's, you know, plussed, you know, it's gotten better and better. What's changed are the rigs. And I know through mentors, animation mentor, I've worked at Blue Sky that was something they were always having to work on, because as the characters developed, you know, you have to sort of upgrade everything. They get super complicated. And now, you know, with fur and feathers, and I mean, Rio 2 looked pretty incredible. But, you know, those early, early movies, starting with Bunny, you know, they couldn't do fur then. So, you know, like, as the characters have progressed, I know that at one point, I can't remember which movie, they were really sort of struggling with the machines. I heard that they kind of, they chugged, you know, that's got to be frustrating. Mm-hmm. Were you, like, waiting, you know, 30 whole seconds to play back your keyframe?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, I think they've always had their own kind of uniquely cartoony approach to things, which, yeah, really, really makes sense that they're doing really interesting things with Peanuts.
I'm not saying I hate the Ice Age movies or anything. It's just I think that they're sort of they've held them back a bit, because they're stylistically they're quite simple.
I'm not sure. I mean, they were very, very influenced by, you know, Chuck Jones and Tex Avery cartoons in the design and in what, you know, like the Scrat shorts.
Totally.
Those are hilarious, by the way.
They're not at all held back by the limitations of the technology, because it's just really, really good. You know, really well directed and really, really funny animation, really well timed. People who, you know, understand animation really. And I think, I don't think they were too held back by, you know, the limitations of and things like that. But you know, that said, if you go back and watch Ice Age, as I did recently, the humans really look quite wooden.
Yeah.
It's quite shocking how your perspectives change and how very, very quickly things start to look quite dated in CG.
Yeah, the further back you go, like some of the earlier movies, like even though, I mean, I love Toy Story, you know.
Absolutely.
Up and down, left and right, just one of the best movies I've ever seen growing up and even today. You know, even so, you can still see how the animation's aged, but, you know, it's also, you have to, you know, suspend your disbelief a little bit. How animation looks now in comparison.
Except that a lot of movies, regarding walk cycles, you know, I mean, you look at any movie, you can look at any Pixar movie, and some of the secondary characters or background characters, if you take a close look at some of those walk cycles, I think, you know, because it takes a lot of people to make a movie, and I think, you know, there are people who sort of just started in the company, or like, you know, maybe people who are doing the intern route or something are doing some of the characters. You know what I mean? I always notice that.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter because the way the movie is directed and the staging is set up and lighting and all of that, I mean, your eye goes exactly where it's supposed to, but it is something.
Exactly. I mean, I think I remember there being a Brad Bird story about him being, him doing a prop review for Incredibles, and he was given just a whole contact sheet full of different lampposts and things like that, and he would say, these are great, but they don't, I don't know what I'm looking at. How important is this lamppost? Is this lamppost going to be flying past us at 60 miles an hour, or is this a lamppost that one of our characters is going to be leaning on?
Right.
And he put his energy in the ones that, you know, are part of the story. So I think, like you're saying, it's a directing thing. It's, you know, it's how important are these background characters? What's the likelihood that someone's going to be, you know, they can't really help the people who are going to be sat watching the DVD 4 years later, looking at the background characters.
Right. Going, that's walk cycle. Yeah. That walk cycle looks a little bit off.
Yeah.
I just love the way it looks like it's not even CG animation. It looks like it could almost be hand-drawn.
Yeah.
But do you know what? It looks a lot to me like a couple of years ago, there was a new Moomins movie.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it was kind of this... it was stop motion, but the characters were slightly raised off the... It was like South Park, okay? Like 2D stop motion.
Yeah, I think I saw about that.
Yeah, and it has a similar kind of effect where it looks kind of bumpy. It has a kind of beveled effect, but it is very still much 2D. The way they've handled Peanuts looks to me very much like that.
But it's also because they want to release it in 3D. So I think maybe if you actually see it in 3D, it looks more... It looks different.
I think that's a gimmick. I think that's... I think filmmakers are over that now. And it seems to be... I know, it just seems to be a burden for filmmakers to... Because if you're going to be doing 3D, I think you have to either be doing Final Destination, where you have things coming at you, and it's really cheesy. or Coraline, you know, where you're kind of...
Right.
It's really, really built into the filmmaking and the story as well.
Right. Otherwise, it's just gratuitous. Yeah, it's a way to sell tickets. It's kind of
exactly. I think
it really is. That's what 3D has become in the movie industry, and it's kind of sad because there are certain films that do it really, really well. Like, I mean, I know Avatar got a lot of praise for its 3D, and then I know as far as animated films go, How to Train Your Dragon, was the flying sequences in that in 3D were absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah, I was sad that I missed that at the cinema, because although I have seen it on, we've actually got a 3D set at home, and I watched it on the 3D at home, and it was still pretty amazing, but I would like to have seen it on the big screen.
Yeah, it was breathtaking. I loved that movie. I mean, I watched it multiple times, and I was choked up. I laughed, I cried.
One of those kind of movies. It's just, it seems like that are where 3D effects work really, really well. But I think a lot of, because of the fact that a lot of filmmakers maybe not be getting that exact, you know, I'm sorry, I'm stumbling over my words. Basically, they're trying to use the fact of 3D as a gimmick, in order to say, oh, if we have 3D, of course people are going to come because they're going to want to see the 3D effects. It's like, well, but if you half-ass it, then people are just going to roll their eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of when it's applied, though. I mean, that's the real difference. If it's applied after the movie has been created and not during, I mean, that's the big difference. And so, I mean, it kind of boils down to a lack of planning, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a bunch of movies that get released, live action movies, where they really, I mean, they don't have, the thing is, they don't have to be honest about whether something was filmed in 3D or not.
Right,
it's all in the marketing. And the problem with animation being, you know, it's still basically for kids, and kids buy into, you know, it feels like going to a show, you know, oh, I get the glasses, I get popcorn, and I put the glasses on, and it looks like I'm going to the movies, and you know, it's pretty much just a marketing thing, I think. But going back to Peanuts, I mean, one of the things that that really interests me about the movie is that it's all set in his town. It's all set. You know, they haven't felt the need to open it out into a wider world. They're not going on a road trip or anything. Exactly. It's just, I mean, apart from a couple of, you know, flights of fancy sequences. It seems to be very much like the old TV show, where the biggest stakes are, is Charlie Brown popular? Who likes him? Does he make a goof of himself in front of the whole school? It's great. And I think, it's really cool to see, them having faith, you know, in the initial concept and not feeling the need to tack on, you know, a movie, you know, where they have
comic strips have been going on for so long. I get they, there is something timeless in those, at least in as far as the comics are concerned, that you really, you know, there is no real need to add anything, because it's self-perpetuating, right? Just like people keep coming back to it, you know, every single time. You, at least I know with whenever I like look at the newspaper, you know, daily newspaper, I always look at the comic section, and I always see Peanuts at the one of the as one of the comics. And It's just one of the, like I said, it's one of those timeless things that you can always come back to.
Yeah, and I also think in the particular case with Blue Sky and Fox is that they needed Schultz's family's blessing, you know, to do it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we'd have a movie at all if we didn't really have the spirit of the original comics and animated specials.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I'm absolutely in. It looks great. It looks like good fun.
I just love the fact it's got the original music and everything. It's just like,
yeah,
it just looks like they're doing it justice. But do you think today's kids are going to care? Do you think they've got any recognition of who Charlie Brown and Snoopy are?
Well, I think they're at least, I know Snoopy's on enough Hallmark cards that that at least he'll be recognizable. At least, kids will be like, oh, I know that. Like, that's Snoopy. He's on greeting cards. He's on a whole bunch of other different stuff. So they'll probably be interested to learn at least more about that particular character, even if they aren't really familiar with all the other ones. And that could be a doorway for kids to be introduced to the other Peanuts characters that, you know, we grew up with, and maybe, you know, well, their parents grew up with.
That's no mistake, though. I mean, Schultz was very shrewd in getting Snoopy on as much merchandise as possible, pretty much to those ends, because, you know, people have been reading Snoopy for years, you know, by the time I was born, and I grew up and found Snoopy comics around the house. So it's, you know, it's kind of always been quite, I think it's always been a bit of a merchandising thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm happy for that to continue, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, he's a lovable character, and he's arguably one of the best characters. Even though he doesn't really talk, you still get a lot of, you know, what his personality is, his relationship with Charlie Brown and the other characters, and just. He's just lovable. He's a puppy dog.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, I think whether young kids are going to take to it, we'll see, I guess. But I don't see why they wouldn't. I think it's really cool. I really hope that it's a film that has a bit of patience.
Yeah.
And it seems like it will. And it will be really interesting to see how kids react to that. Because I think... kids, they're always kind of played down to a lot, and they're given very high octane, you know, movies to watch, and it will be really cool to see how they respond to something which is, you know, a bit calmer in places and isn't, yeah, you know, firing jokes every 2 seconds just to keep you interested.
I think it's smart they're tying it in with Christmas as well, because it seems to be, it's all snowy and everything, it's coming out in time for Christmas. There's the whole connection with like Peanuts Christmas specials and everything as well.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's so fitting.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much going to be something that I think parents will be dragging the kids to, but because we'll probably end up enjoying it.
Yeah, I have a feeling that it's probably going to be one of those kind of movies that it may resonate a little bit with more of an older generation than the younger generation, but the younger generation, you know, even if they don't really understand maybe why their parents like it so much, it's still something that they can get into.
It's so weird. That's happening with everything at the moment. Like, Star Wars, it's so crazy that there's going to be another Star Wars movie. And pretty much all the people are going to go and see it.
Oh, yeah. Including myself.
We'll be the people who grew up watching Star Wars dragging their kids to it. It's so strange that, you know, the kids of today have grown up to watch kids' movies based on what their parents liked.
Well, yeah, but I think kids will want to see it too.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. Kids love Star Wars. Is concerned that's a different beast entirely. That's been being perpetuated for a long time. But we can talk about that in a little bit, because I have opinions on one of the most recent things that came out in the Star Wars fandom series.
That's what we call a teaser, listeners.
Yeah.
Sure. Is that, can I tease that even further? Is that going to be about Rebels?
Quite possibly.
That's really a tease.
Wow, that is a big tease. Okay.
Okay, and then other trailers that have been released recently. There is The Secret Life of Pets from Illumination Entertainment.
Okay.
What do we think about that one, then?
I like the idea. I definitely, I mean, it's definitely like a Toy Story kind of esque like idea, where you have, you know, we're getting a look in the life and the of these pets when their owners are not in the house or not in the apartment, since that's where the setting is. But at the same time, like, I mean, from the trailer itself, it looked like it had a lot of potential for a lot of really great comedy opportunities, but. I think I remember I was looking at the synopsis. I think we talked about the synopsis before, where they have, there's going to be a story about a crazy rabbit that's going to try and take over the world. And, you know, then it, like, when you have stuff like that, it kind of brings down my expectations a little bit, because it's just like, you're not focusing on what you should be focusing on.
It's exactly what you were saying, Dan, about Peanuts, about the confidence to have the small story. And this is the opposite.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you've seen that in a couple of movies this year, I think, where earlier in the year in the UK we had Shaun the Sheep, and the trailers for that were what you got with the movie. You had
amazing.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, but you had, like, you know, a bunch of very influenced by silent movie sort of skits and visual jokes, and everything was very much. You know, there was no dialogue, and everything was, it was pretty much a story with lots of little, visual gags, you know, stringing the story together. And I thought that was what the Minions movie was going to be. And I've since heard that it isn't quite so much that, which is a little bit disappointing. But yeah, I mean, that's what the Secret Life of Pets looked like to me. So it's a little bit disappointing to hear that it's going to be this whole other thing. But, you know, Pixar used to do this sort of thing. Pixar used to just do, and they still do, actually, I think. You know, they just do trailers which don't feature any footage from the movie, but are just like little skits, kind of touching on the concept. You know, the Monsters, Inc.
The
trailer.
Monsters, Inc.,
yeah, exactly. Or even The Incredibles, where Bob was trying to get his belt on or something. It was.
Oh, that was a great one.
So, but it is kind of strange because I think what Illumination does best is comedy and those kind of light things, and it's a bit of a shame, you know, to see them. Well, not it's too early to say because the movie hasn't been released, but it's strange to see them try and do a Pixar thing when I don't think really that's why people watch their movies. I think they watch them because they're little yellow things running around going
bottom
and, you know, it's
or banana.
Yeah exactly. And there's nothing,
and the little yellow guy apparently making out or trying to like come onto a yellow hydrant.
Yeah. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think, like, a bit of variety is really good. You know, you don't have, Adam McKay films don't pretend, you know, Step Brothers doesn't pretend that it's also going to make you cry and make you fall in love with these characters, even though you do. But, you know, it's not a prestige movie.
You fall in love with them for different reasons. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Maybe that was a bad example. But, yeah, but it could go either way. But you know, I really like the look of the characters. They look quite fun. The grumpy cat, who immediately bats away his dinner, really made me laugh.
It keeps going after the chicken, and then gets the spots of the cake. It's like, oh boy, it's the fat cat.
So, were there any other trailers? I mean, there was Zootopia, right?
Oh god, that was hilarious.
That is being released in the UK as Zootropolis.
You're kidding.
Really?
It's one of these. There's some copyright conflict. Something, I don't know what it is. It might be a cleaning product or something. Something just completely obscure. But it's a trademark conflict. So they've got to change the title. It's like when Tomorrowland came out, because there was a music festival over here called Tomorrowland. It became Tomorrowland, A World Beyond.
So corny.
Yeah,
I'm so surprised when I heard that, because it's like, hang on, come on, it's Disney. You're like the biggest media empire in the world. I'm sure you could probably say, you know, just bully smaller companies with names that you want. And just
they could just make two different sets of posters and not have to bother with all the.
Yeah, I mean, there have been movies like, you know, Disney weren't worried when they called their movie Frozen, because of there was a horror movie called Frozen about being stuck on a ski lift.
Yeah, which has resulted in some fun things for people who work in video stores.
But as for Zootopia, I have to say, as far as a teaser trailer goes, I think they did all the right marks. They really got a good sense of humor going with this movie that will probably, like, I hope carries through with the other trailers. But just from that one teaser trailer, I'm very excited to see what kind of story is going to evolve in this world that they're creating.
I felt it was very, very, very teasy. The fact that it was all happening on a white background.
I kind of like that, though. I like not seeing everything.
Sure. Kind of. I thought it was kind of odd that they were marketing it based on something that Disney has been doing for years and years and years.
There's talking animals.
Yeah, like,
Here's an explanation for why.
Yeah, it's like, what if Animal wore a tie? How hilarious, right? And it's like... well, yeah, but show something else. But actually,
they've done anthropomorphic animals before. Robin Hood.
Yeah, exactly. It was a really odd choice, I thought. But it's also creative. And I have heard from people who went to Annecy, where they showed a little bit more of the production design, and they actually showed a couple of finished shots from the movie, that it sounds very much like they were teasing the world in this trailer for a very, very specific reason, in that it has got everyone very, very, very excited who has seen it.
Interesting. But it's basically a buddy cop movie, isn't it? It's what I've got from it, about a fox and a buddy.
Admittedly, as far as putting two animals in the same room, as far as being anthropomorphic animals, that would be interesting to see. But yeah, from what I hear, yeah, the bunny's supposed to be some kind of officer or cop of some kind, and the fox is a bit hard to read. Like, if he's like some kind of like, if he's a thief, if he's just like a regular guy, you know, going about his day or whatever, just likes causing trouble for rabbits. I don't know.
Yeah, I understand that he is something of an ex-con or something like that.
He's a con artist or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Like a criminal turned, you know, maybe turned cop or something like that.
Not bad. Not bad idea.
But I mean, like, the early buzz that I heard from the Annecy preview was that it's really, really, really funny. And they have got a lot of humor out of, you know, the different animals they're going to be using. So that sounds promising. There seems to be inevitably a really interesting thematic, thing that they're going to try, where it seems to be very much about being different, and they're going to, it seems like it's going to be a lot about race and about people who are different from you, and not judging someone based on what they look like, or other prejudices you might have about that type of person.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it sounds interesting.
I really wish that movie the best, and I really hope it actually, you know, tries something different, and, you know, it tackles that topic and actually does it very well. But, you know, it's hard to gauge where, at least in this early stage, which direction a film could go. I really hope they just only try to touch lightly on maybe those issues, but maybe just try to keep going more with the humor, because it seems that's where they're trying to push it, at least right now.
Yeah, I mean, and that would also be very refreshing, because, I mean, ever since Disney, like, you know, struck gold with Frozen, it seems like they're fun and I thought, like, you know, Wreck-It Ralph was really, really fun.
It's the same director, isn't it? It's Rich Moore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So, because next year we've got that, and then we've got Moana, which is the princess.
Oh, is that next
Polynesian
year?
Polynesian princess one, which is from Clements and Musker.
Ron and John.
Classic team. So we've got interesting combination of Disney films coming out next
year. Well, I think Wreck-It Ralph is probably my favorite Disney movie of recent times. So so if Rich Moore's involved, then I'm in.
It looks really great. It sort of reminds me, it reminds me a lot of things, like throwback to lots of different types of animation, but also it reminds me of the walk cycle segment in the animation survival kit, you know.
Yeah, as a teaser it's great. It's just I'm a bit not sure about the concept of the actual film, where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were other big teaser recently. It's been the one for The Good Dinosaur from Pixar. Have you seen that anywhere?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen that one.
You haven't seen it?
It's very teasy.
I tell you where you should go. You should go to this website called animationforadults.com. It's quite good.
Never heard of it.
There's some trailers on there, and you can watch it there.
I've been very, very busy this week.
I know you have. But it was like two weeks ago,
and not a lot
so
of sleep either. And yeah, no time for extras, really. But I'm looking forward to seeing it.
it's very, very teasy. It pretty much just introduces the concept. You know, it's the high concept you know, elevator pitch of the movie, where what if the asteroid that supposedly wiped out the dinosaurs didn't, and it missed, and what if humans evolved alongside dinosaurs?
It reminds me of the teaser they did for the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie.
Oh, right, yeah.
God, I didn't even think of that at first. Wow.
Yeah. It was another thing, actually, that I heard from all the very lucky people, of whom I'm really jealous, who went to Annecy. They did a preview of The Good Dinosaur there. And I heard that it looks really good and interesting. They had a lot of troubles with the production, it sounds like. Originally, it was Bob Peterson?
Yeah, and it was supposed to come out last year.
Yeah, and then they postponed it, and then he was taken off. And then Pete Sohn, who joined Pixar on The Incredibles, was one of Brad Bird's team he brought over from The Iron Giant, now directing it.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I mean, Pete Sohn's... I've had my eye on Pete Sohn for a long time. He, his first actual presence in a Pixar movie is in The Incredibles. They have a courtroom sketch at the very, very start, and he did these courtroom sketches, and they're beautiful, beautiful drawings. And he's I think he was also the inspiration for the kid in Up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's an interesting talent, but you know, maybe it sounds like Inside Out sounds like it was fantastic, and I'm really, really anticipating it. It would be a miracle if Pixar had another hit this year.
Yeah, so, that would double whammy, if you will.
Exactly. I mean, it would be great. It would be absolutely great. But, you know, behind the scenes, it does not sound like things went smoothly at all. And it sounds like at the moment they're just trying to get the damn thing finished.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of interesting because the dinosaurs are very, very cartoony.
Yeah.
And the environments are very much not. And it looked a little odd to me at this at first. So, but you know, they literally released about 15 seconds of actual really, really teasy clips in the trailer. So there's a lot more to see.
I'm just hoping it's less Disney's dinosaur and more Jim Henson's dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think the Henson sort of Muppets influence is really strong at Pixar. Pete Docter said that it was a big influence on Kevin, the bird in Up.
Oh, I can see that, actually.
Yeah, because, you know, its eyes don't move too much, and it's really just in the acting that it has to communicate everything. I would be surprised if they tried to be very, very serious about everything. I don't really think that's Pixar's style, to be honest.
No, it really isn't. I mean, even if you do have, you know, in the more serious moments in some of the Pixar movies, they don't really stay there for very long. Like they'll talk about it, and they may delve into the idea a little bit to just kind of bring it to the surface, but then they'll just kind of they'll move on a little bit, at least in some of the films.
Yeah, and I mean, I think when Pixar tried to be their most interesting, frankly, with Brave, people didn't take to it. They thought it was boring and not good, and you know, the humor feels quite tacked on in Brave, I think, as well. So, so maybe it's not their strong suit. And you know, regardless of whether it's their strong suit, audiences don't like it. So,
the one thing I would contest with that. I mean, I think it's something that Pixar is very capable of if they manage to put the time and effort in. And case in point, I have seen Inside Out, and there are a few. They do tackle a bit of a topic that at least that is a bit more on the serious note, and I thought that they did it very well.
Oh yeah, oh no, absolutely. I mean, you know, even in live action film circles, mentioned Up, and the first 10 minutes are just they consider it, because it's a masterpiece. The opening section where it's all you know, played out without any dialogue or anything.
But I mean, they do that in a lot in many other movies I mean,
true.
Up was the same way. There's a really sad beginning. Wall-E had the same kind of thing. I mean, I would say that the difference between Brave and pretty much, well, I haven't seen Inside Out yet, is that they're not using that kind of strange, I mean, I always thought it was a little bit strange, sort of like movement. It's almost like a setup with different movements or song movements or something, where like they almost sort of change styles. Do you know what I mean? There's like a whole first section with not a lot of dialogue that sets it up and breaks your heart, makes you love the main character. And then, you know, then there's another part that's like more story development. And then like movement three is like this crazy, zany chase scene, wacky, wacky, laughing. And then in the end, you know, and then maybe action, you know.
Yeah.
And then it ties together. And I remember just, I mean, it just was interesting to me because I was like, okay, well, Wall-E had that. And then Up seemed to have that, you know. I'm like, well, it's like they're in chunks, you know.
It's whereas really,
Brave,
really
cool. Yeah. Except for the fantasy fairy tale portion, had more continuity in a way for me, you know, style wise.
I really like Brave. I think it's it's quite underrated. And I remember when it came out, there was an Empire review that described it perfectly for me. It said, "This is like boutique Pixar." Where you have to come at it on its own terms, and I think if you do, there's a lot to like about Brave. But it's very interesting.
Sort of,
about Pixar having first act problems. I think that is why I'm really really interested in Inside Out, because I've heard that the ending is very 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 surprising and. Like films should be, it's the most memorable part.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. I think I heard Andrew Stanton once talking about how they develop stories at Pixar, and they do. I hear they tend to be very happy with just coming up with great first acts, and then really struggling from there to find the rest of the movie. And yeah, unfortunately, with Up and with Wall-E. It's quite clear that there are two different movies going on. You know, there's the movie where Wally's on Earth and he's chasing Eve in his kind of cute but quite creepy way. And then there's the movie where he's in space with Jeff Garlin, and it's like, okay, fell in love with one thing and now you're throwing me into a really different space.
Yeah, but if the whole of Up was like the first 10 minutes, it might be kind of hard going.
No, I know, but still.
Yeah.
By the end, you'd be in pieces.
I don't know.
My God, why are you doing this to me?
My kind of movie.
Yeah.
I like to be torn to shreds emotionally.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, same. And that's why I love Princess Kaguya when it came out, because it was just like...
Oh, man.
But there was... Okay, so there was one other trailer... that I'm not sure if it was too popular with anyone. Hotel Transylvania 2.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Did anyone see that?
I did. I actually, when I went and saw Inside Out in theaters, that was one of the trailers that that was aired right before the movie came on. So, well...
I did not care for the first one.
No.
I didn't care for the first one either, and... I'm sorry, the trailer for the second movie did not do very much to sway my opinion that the second one will be any better. Because from what I can see, the whole premise is about the father, you know, the Dracula... I forget what the character's actual name is, I'm sorry. He's trying to keep his daughter from moving out of the hotel with her husband and now son, and he's... trying to do everything he can with his monster buddies to make sure that their son is, you know, become, you know, make sure he's a, you know, vampire or whatever. So you're a monster. So he doesn't have to, they don't have to leave and he has to stay in the hotel and hijinks ensues. And I'm just,
well, I'll be honest. Yeah. Story wise, it's not the best, and it might be absolutely sacrilegious to say, but I don't think story-wise Genndy Tartakovsky is the greatest, but as an animator the way he makes the characters move looks amazing. And even if it might not have the most fantastic story, I can just watch his, you know, I can watch Hotel Transylvania and be just entertained by the crazy movement he gets.
Yeah, I will admit, I think that's definitely Gendy's strongest talent, at least when it comes to animation. It's just the way he, you know, his character designs, which I actually am a really, really big fan of, at least from his past works, and this one too. And like you said, the movement of the characters, especially when they get into hijinks, it's always pretty fun to watch.
Yeah,
because it makes you take you back to Dexter's lab.
Yeah, it was such a shame to hear that he's off Popeye at Sony.
Yeah, I'm gutted about that.
Because that test was great. Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Kind of like Peanuts, in that it's the spirit is the original.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was also kind of creeped out a little bit by how much it looked like Robin Williams in the in the Rod Altman Popeye movie from I think 1980.
Yeah, I remember.
Like
that.
He has like a little tuft of blonde hair.
Do you know the best thing about that film is the set?
Yes,
they built this little village.
Yes,
this amazing.
I really want to go. I really want
and
to go.
You can go to it in Malta, and I went to Malta a couple of times, my family years ago, and we went to Popeye Village.
No way!
And it's pretty amazing.
Oh my god! I hear that you can. They have a movie theater there, and the only thing that plays is Popeye.
I don't think they had it then. It was years ago.
And I heard also that when you go, you can dress up as Popeye, Olive Oil, and the I've forgotten his name, Wimpy. God. And you can
done it up since I went.
And you can reenact like parts of the movie on the set. That set has paid for itself.
Wow. It's so cool. It's all wonky and everything. I love it.
Yeah. There was one more trailer I really want to talk about.
And what would that be?
Which is very, very teasy. And that is, I've got to be very careful saying his name.
Is it Mutafukas?
Mutafukas, yeah.
I don't know.
That's going to be renamed. It's released in English-speaking territories.
Why would that be?
Sorry?
Why do you think that might be?
I think that might be because it sounds like, as George Carlin would say, father.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm really excited because I heard about this movie, I think about 4 years ago, because I knew one of the animators who was working on it. And, animated films take a long time to make, but this has been in production itself for a very long time. And I don't know, it looks really, really interesting. I love Studio 4C or 4 Degrees. Yeah. I'm not sure how you meant to say that. Ever since I saw Tech on Concrete as a kid, or as a teenager. So yeah, Tech on Concrete's a really unique anime movie in that it looks very unique, I think. It has a really, really distinctive kind of angular style with the characters.
Yeah.
And the backgrounds are really, really lush. The art director is this Japanese illustrator whose name escapes me right now, but they just have this amazing detailed look. And this looks like it's kind of in that same vein visually.
Mm. Yeah, I wrote it up for the site, so I saw it. It looks interesting.
Yeah, it looks I don't know what the hell's going on.
No.
But it's, I mean, I've kind of gotten to the stage where, oh, if there's a good-looking 2D movie, I really want to go and try and support it. And
yeah,
right. I'm happy.
Yeah, pretty much
happy to, you know, even if the story isn't much cop, it's just you know, I get a kick out watching 2D animation still.
But when the French and the Japanese team up, it just gives me flashbacks to my childhood animations that they did, like Ulysses 31 and Mysterious Cities of Gold.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, anytime I hear French and Japanese co-production, I'm sort of in.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, speaking of cool 2D animation, I saw a little, not a full preview, but a tiny little portion that they could allow, that we could, they could show us, because there's a Kickstarter campaign going for it, and they have to obviously show the funders first. Sure. But it was Simon's Cat in color.
I've backed that. Yeah. I love Simon's Cat. It's amazing.
It really is. Way. It is. Yeah, it looked pretty neat. Yeah, there's an 11-minute movie.
Wow.
I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm so pleased.
Yeah, no, that was exciting.
Yeah, I'm getting the art book, signed art book.
Are you?
Yeah, it's one of my first crowdfunding things I backed.
Yeah, that's nice. Terrific. Yeah, Emma Birch came to speak to us at the animation lab. It was terrific.
Sweet.
Yeah, she talked about production and her work on that. And we, yeah, in history. I mean, I didn't need to see the history because I remember when they were first released on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. Sort of been following them from there. They're so funny.
Yeah, but it started out like the one bloke, pretty much, and it's become a little business, isn't it?
Yep. So it's right.
A really good.
Yeah, it was keeping.
Story.
I mean, it was keeping the whole studio going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They had an intro movie. Yeah, you could go to their site. I mean, they've got a little intro movie actually, sort of showing the studio, and they have some of the animators speaking.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome! Yeah, I should check that out.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to them finishing that, so I can see it. Okay, all right, so we're going to talk about a bit of the stuff we've been able to watch and stuff and what we've been up to this week. In my case, last couple of weeks, I've pretty much, for the magazine, I've had to be watching a couple of things to review. So I've been mainly watching that. And one of them is the anime series Bleach, which is now on to Series 15 Part 2, apparently, which I've just found out is the penultimate season, so it's nearly done.
Wow.
And Bleach is basically, it's a fun show, but it's also kind of frustrating because it's got this problem with filler. What you might not know is that all the long-running anime series that are adapted from ongoing manga, they're always in danger of catching up with the source material, so they basically make stuff up, and the people who make the TV series, they write their own storylines to fill in time. And imagine, if you will, that you're watching, say, Game of Thrones, and they've just got to a really important bit, and I won't use a real important bit, I'll make one up. So we say the orange christening, something like that. And then suddenly you get that really important bit, and then they think, oh no, we've really nearly caught up with the book, so we better add in something. So then you find out that Daenerys has a cousin she's never heard of, and that's the plot for 26 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Shonen anime have that problem. And like I can count at least, like there's Bleach. Naruto is a big offender of that, like for two series running, both the original series and the Shippuden, and then Fairy Tail, and it just goes on and on and on. And basically anything that, and One Piece too, like at least with One Piece, you know, with them traveling around the ocean, at least it kind of makes some kind of sense. You know, they're traveling, going to new places, at least that kind of fits with the filler. But yeah,
I feel like you don't notice it so much with One Piece, but Bleach, it's really egregious, because the way that, basically it's where they put it. You'll be like in the middle of a really key battle that's been building up for series and series, and then in the middle of the battle you get to the next episode bit and they go, hey, we're just going to leave it there and do an alternative storyline. And you're like, no, not again.
I wonder how their viewership, you know, does that not suffer, like, when they have filler on? Because surely they have people watching the series on TV still. It's all broadcast in Japan.
Well, Bleach is finished, so I guess
right. People
start watching it a bit.
Yeah, so, but I'm always shocked as to how they managed to stay on the air.
They still, I'm sure the series still has its, has plenty of its like diehard fans that are probably still, you know, watching as much of it as they possibly can, like whatever comes out. But
yeah, that's true.
It's probably, as far as I can tell, that's probably the only thing that might be keeping it alive. Because even some of the fans that I knew that were big into Bleach have kind of fallen off the wagon.
Yeah, the only shonen series I've ever finished was Dragon Ball, because it was finished. And I knew how long it was, what I was getting myself into. And following it just becomes a real, you know, I tried following Naruto for a little bit when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And it became a real chore. Because they're really, really long series as it is. And then, you know, as you're saying, Chris, once you have filler, you go, really? What's the point of me watching this if this isn't actually going to have any consequences?
Well, Naruto, as far as, because I've actually been, I've believe it or not, I've actually been trying to keep up with it at least every now and again, even despite all the random filler seasons that keep jumping in and out of the whole, like, big climactic war that they're currently having, that it's really it, like sometimes it like I want to like the filler episodes because they do add like give some more character to the main cast, because the manga certainly didn't have time to delve into it too much from what I read. But then there are some episodes where it just is like, why would you even dedicate, you know, half an hour of your time or like a couple minutes to this story that adds nothing?
Thing is, they could sort it out by just having, you know, seasons and then having a break.
Yeah.
Just like everyone else does, rather than running 52 weeks a year when you've got a series that runs 52 weeks a year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it, you know, it's Bleach. It's still fun. It's just it's quite frustrating at times.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I had to watch for the magazine was Dragon Ball Kai, which, funnily enough, is where they went back to Dragon Ball and they took all the filler out.
Yep.
Hey.
And they remastered it a bit, and there's bits of new animation which kind of stick out like a sore thumb, but they look kind of cool. So that's fun as well. And you can look out for those reviews in the forthcoming issue of my own magazine for my full verdict. Little plug there. And that's... what else have I been watching? I have actually been working my way through season 6 of Archer, which is...
Oh, good old Archer.
Archer's fantastic. Interestingly, I read something on a website like months ago where it said that season 6, the entire cast had been replaced by sound-alikes because they wanted too much money or something, and I couldn't get it confirmed anywhere.
That and sounds like it could have been an April Fool's joke, right?
And I did wonder if maybe that's what it was, because I don't remember what the site was. And I've started watching season 6, and nope, everyone's there. So, which I'm pleased about. But yeah, I think it might be the last season, but it's really good so far.
Cool.
And yeah.
Very cool.
That's what I've been watching lately.
Awesome. How is... hang on, sorry... Archer Vice was series 5, is that right?
Yeah, and this is season 6, and okay. They are now employed by the CIA.
Yep.
Not ISIS.
Because that has... yeah, that has some issues with that name.
They subtly dealt with it in the background. They just had them rolling out the sign in the background.
Brilliant. I think Archer's fantastic. Never mention it again.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird cases where... you know, unfortunately, with lots of American series, where you have to kind of look through the animation a little bit to enjoy the episodes as themselves. But
yeah,
once you get...
It improves as it goes along, though.
No, to be fair, it really does. It really does.
Huh. There's like a sequence in season 6 where it's like a car chase, and it's like referencing Bullet, and I think it's in San Francisco, and it's pretty amazing.
Okay, yeah. Well, I should check that out. It's just, it's kind of strange to me when you hear H. John Benjamin. Like really screaming his face off, and then the expression on the character is quite limited and not nearly expressing the same emotion.
I like the way it looks though. I like the art style.
Sure, sure. No, it looks great. It does. It's not horrible to look at all. it's just pretty much from an animation point of view. You think, okay, yeah, I mean, they're doing the thing where it's sort of, because it is made, it's made as a radio play first. Yeah. And it's kind of doing that thing where you go, because I sometimes watch Archer when I work, and you don't actually have to really look at it to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's mostly comes through the audio and like the voices of the characters.
Yeah, but boy, the writing is top notch.
Oh, always.
One other thing. I got a chance. I watched a bit of the remake of The Clangers.
I did too yesterday morning.
There was a lot of talk about that during the animation lab.
Yeah, I bet you heard about it and had no idea what it was.
I didn't,
about.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, there's these British animators who, they were sort of from the 50s onwards, they did like these a few TV series. They're a two-man team, and it was basically done in a barn, like that's not far away from where I live.
It was Oliver Postgate, is that right?
Yeah.
And who else?
And Peter Furman.
That's it, yeah. And they became pretty much synonymous with animation in the UK because they produced series which were just shown again and again. And I think the first thing of theirs I saw was Eye for the Engine. That was small films, right? Is it small films?
Yeah, they did. They did like both 2D animation and stop motion, and they did Clangers was basically this series. In it first aired like a week after the moon landing or something. So, and it's about these little pink creatures, and they were these little, they're knitted little creatures, and they live on a little rock, and it was just like this incredibly gentle series because Oliver Postgate used to do the voiceover, and it's just like for British people for generations because it was on in the 60s, and then it was just there was only like 26 episodes and it's repeated constantly.
Yeah, and the same with all of his series really. They had a really, it was like story time. They were very very gentle and whimsical sort of stories with they were mostly narrated because the animation was so limited. None of the characters had voices or any kind of acting, you know, in terms of lip syncing or anything like that. But it was like story time for the nation, really.
I'll have to check that out.
They're very beloved.
Yeah, when I was little, there's one of the other series is called Bagpuss.
That's probably his most famous series.
Yeah, when I was little, because like I said, it's near where I live. They actually brought in Bagpuss to my school. And it was amazing.
That was a real gasp from me, and a polite gasp from everyone else.
That was sounded genuine.
But if you're British, it's amazing. But anyway, yeah, Clangers, they've done a remake of it. They haven't remade any other stuff, but they've done a remake, and they've, like, Oliver Postgate's dead, but his son's still alive. And Peter Furman's still going, and his son is involved with it. And they've done it they've done it old school, basically. All the puppets are still knitted. It's a bit more of a big production because it used to be animated by two people, and it's now animated by six. But it's still pretty small, and it's just the spirit of it, and they've just captured it.
Yeah, the spirit's absolutely still there. I mean, technically, it's a lot more refined. One thing that needs kind of explaining a little bit is kind of part of the charm of Oliver Postgate's stuff is that a lot of it was very, very handmade, and you really felt the hand of the individual artists, you know, in all of his series. Really, Bagpuss was about toys in a toy shop, and they all had a very kind of imperfect, you know.
They were supposed to be like lost toys, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the polish did not ruin anything for me in the new series. And it's, you know, it's narrated by Michael Palin. Yeah, so it's I thoroughly enjoyed it. I watched one episode where the soup dragon which is this dragon that I can't describe it. It's a soup dragon. It's a dragon that makes and looks after soup, which is like the only other thing that lives on the same planet as the Clangers.
Yeah.
And it was an episode about the soup dragon wanting to keep a tidy place, and the Clangers wanting soup, and the dragon not being ready for them. So the Clangers make a really big machine that can take as much soup as they want all at once, and they try and get out of the soup dragon's cave, and they get stuck because the machine they've used has just expanded and they can't get out the hole. And the soup dragon's really, really pissed off with everyone. And it turns out the soup dragon really likes people coming to visit him every day. Sorry, her, every day. The stories are like that. They're very, very gentle. But that's absolutely part of their charm.
It's going to be shown in America, but the voiceover is going to be done by William Shatner instead. Just a little.
Oh, my, no.
Seriously?
No.
Yeah. Not Michael Palin, you've got Shatner.
I kind of like that.
That sounds kind of... I thought it was the joke, what you said, but, I mean, that sounds kind of great in a way.
That would really suit it.
I don't know why, but I'm getting Animaniacs flashbacks to that one where they mock Shatner's singing ability.
But he's so charismatic, and he's got a terrific voice.
That's true. That's true.
He does. I just saw him...
fitting, I think.
I just saw a Q&A with him. He did, another documentary called Chaos on the Bridge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he did a whole Q&A after the movie. It was wonderful. I mean,
maybe he'll surprise me. I don't know. I mean, I love, obviously, Star Trek is its own separate entity, and that's probably, the only thing I've ever really seen him in, acting-wise. So, that and Airplane, too.
Well, no, I mean, he's just got a great voice. I'm just thinking it might be interesting. We'll
see,
I guess.
I think that would be good. I'm all for alternative, voice tracks. I mean, I really liked, because this is a complete tangent, but Stephen Fry used to read the Harry Potter audiobooks in the UK.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jim Dale does it in the US. And... Oh. I listen to Jim Dale's, and I really, really like them. So I think,
they're good. I didn't know that. I mean, I would like to hear Stephen Fry.
Yeah, he's fantastic at doing all the voices. Very, very good for the early books, I think. Maybe not so much with the later ones, where they get a bit more serious.
Why would they switch people like that? I mean, if it's the same.
I have no idea. I mean,
speaking
I guess,
the same language, is it
I
really?
I guess it's just different sensibilities, maybe.
Really interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Rachel, what have you been watching?
Well, the biggest thing definitely is I got to watch the season 2 premiere of Star Wars Rebels on Disney XD, and I have to say with the way they're starting off. Starting this new season off with that 1 hour movie premiere, they've hit the ground running by throwing Vader into throwing Darth Vader into the whole scene, and I am very excited to see where it's going to go because you definitely feel Vader's presence throughout the entire episode. Whether he's actually in front of our heroes or not, and it really reminded me of the original Star Wars movies, A New Hope and, what was it, The Empire Strikes Back, because you definitely just, it feels very much like the old films in just terms of, the way it looks, the way they're handling with the animation, and also the tone, the overall tone of the movie, with, a lot of really, good humor and good character moments, but also a lot of, a lot of really hard-hitting moments, too, the minute you see, Vader duke it out for the first time with with the protagonists, it's a complete, steamrolled over them. They had no choice but to run away, and it's because, just Vader's just simply walking toward them and then forcing, using the force to throw them into walls and blocking every single attack set at him. So, I'm really excited.
And it's James L. Jones doing the voice as well, isn't it?
Yes, and while he sounds a bit different, you know, obviously it's been, like, who knows how long since he, you know, he was had to say so many lines with this character. At the same
Other
time...
No.
At the same time... It feels...
do not want.
It feels like a really... It still feels like, you know, like the way it did back then when you were watching the films. Like I said, just having him there makes it feel really, really super nostalgic for me.
I always felt the Vader voice, though, always seemed dubbed. Like, it doesn't quite match the motions.
It is.
And that's why. Yeah. But I was always like, what? That's a strange action choice. I mean, like, even as a kid, kind of going, like, that seems strange. But, I mean, it really just added a little extra creepiness for me.
Yeah.
It was still later. I was like, oh, right.
Well, obviously, with the animation in this, it has to be a bit more matched up because the animation, I think, is being done around the vocals, I think, this time, this go around. So every movement, you know, is being done, you know, on purpose, and they don't waste that at all, at least in terms of getting, you know, setting up this character, reintroducing him to a possibly a younger audience.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, that's
I
awesome.
Want to see a version of Star Wars with the original voice of Darth Vader, because
yes,
he was a British guy from the West Country, and that basically means he talks like a pirate.
That'd be great to see.
That's terrific.
Yeah, I really like the look of Rebels, though. I mean, I only saw about 3 episodes. I watched the original pilot. Mm-hmm. And exactly what you're saying about it really feeling like the original movies, I absolutely got. So season 2 sounds like fun.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to be delving into a lot more... the different characters in this this season, like because it seems like they're having a lot more fun with season 1 just kind of being more of an adventurous like romp with the characters, you know, sticking it to the Empire and everything like that. But this, you know, now that the tone's definitely changed very much, like Empire Strikes Back, with the stakes being raised.
Oh, wow.
And you know, the heroes are on the run. The planet that they've been living on, they can no longer stay on because now Vader's there, and so they're probably going to be trying to travel around, trying to do what they can to help, you know, people who are trying to fight against the Empire and helping the budding Rebel Alliance. But we're going to get a lot more opportunities to learn more about the other different characters, because we've had a lot of time with our two primary Jedi characters. But it would be great to learn more about Hera, the pilot, and a bunch of the other different characters, and even have quite a few nods to Star Wars The Clone Wars, since that became such a big success. So they had to bring back Ahsoka Tano, and even more so the one of the clone troopers, that characters that became a huge dark horse in the Clone Wars series. They had to bring him back too.
Okay, I'm sold.
If I could find somewhere to watch it.
That is a bit of an issue.
Because I noticed it's on Disney XD. Is that right? And it's on Disney XD, yeah, in the UK. But I mean, even if I could get hold of it, I noticed it's only on at like 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. And
if I find out of an alternate place to watch it, I will definitely let you know, because it is really worth watching. Even if it's just only for, like, you know, an hour episode. And we're not going to be getting any more episodes, I think, of that of the season until the fall, because this is kind of just like, you know, whetting the appetite of the audience, and then waiting until the fall starts when everyone's back in school, and then just airing it then.
Right.
But
those
still,
swines.
I know. Just like, especially with the way the last episode with this premiere ended. I'm just like, how can you make us wait?
Oh God, I feel like I'm in an abusive relationship with Star Wars, because it's just like, I can roll my eyes as much as I want in any conversation when someone mentions Star Wars is back, but I know, like, once autumn comes and Star Wars fever hits, I'm gonna be just, you know, you won't be able to shut me up about it.
Yeah, I really
you're
hope...
You're sitting in the front room with your lightsaber.
Yeah, exactly.
I really hope with what they're doing with Star Wars Rebels, I mean, besides the fact that they're taking the opportunity to tell a really, really neat story with these characters and how the Rebel Alliance will eventually be formed, I really hope that it kind of leads into, like, a good way to build what the movie, I know the movie that's going to be coming out this Christmas is going to be, is the kind of tone that that movie's going to have. I really, at least I hope so.
Oh, yeah, oh, definitely. Disney are not stupid at all, and they know exactly what tone they want each of their movies to be. The Marvel movies are very much of a type, and the remakes of, you know, Cinderella and I think Alice in Wonderland have their own kind of I can't really describe it. They have their own sort of feeling about, you know, as you were saying, like levels of humor and levels of scariness. And I think Star Wars has been bought by Disney. You know, they're really clever, and it has been bought as a brand. And there is going to be, to use the word synergy, but there is going to be. A Star Wars feeling, which I think they're gonna recognize as like a drug for people, and it's gonna that's gonna keep you coming back.
Well, they've already learned. I mean, with the Marvel movies, that if you acknowledge the continuity and if you try to, you know, if you address what, you know, the fans say about certain characters, like this is how this character should act, that's not how that character should act, that's, you know, it's contradicting. They seem to be actively listening.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, I have a thing with my friends where we talk about this, and we've pretty much come to the conclusion that Disney are really, really good at fan service. And
that they are!
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not always necessarily a great thing.
No.
Because it means they take less risks when it comes to, you know, making really interesting movies. And I really don't, because I'm kind of bored of Marvel movies right now, because I can really feel the cogs of the machine that they have working with it.
Yeah.
And I really don't want that to happen to Star Wars.
It's gonna. Yeah. It's gonna be a Star Wars movie every year, at least.
You're gonna get tired of it.
All the spin-offs and everything.
But while it lasts, let's be excited about it.
Yeah, I agree. And at least as far as in terms of story goes, well, at least with the season 2 premiere of Rebels has presented, it's got a lot of really, it has a lot of potential to go a lot of really interesting paces, and I'm really hoping that they jump on that potential and ride it out for as long as they can, but they don't, you know, don't try to make it stay. Like, don't try to, like, draw it out too much.
Yeah, exactly.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Is there anything else you've been watching you want to talk about?
I'm trying to think. I've been trying to catch up on my Steven Universe. I know we have one of our Twitter questions was if we had actually watched Steven Universe and know what's going on in that, and I certainly have been trying to keep up with it. Because it is a very special show. Let me just put it out there that it is, I never expected when I sat down to watch an episode when it came on that it was going to be any good, and I kind of jumped in right into that point in the series where it kind of just kind of threw a new idea at you or like really kind of help you delve into the world and the characters, and it just really caught me by surprise on how emotional and how heartfelt it was.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it.
I watched the pilot, and it seemed like something kind of in the mold of Being Puppycat, where it was very, very whimsical, and it had, like, sort of anime influences, and it was about a lovable sort of loser kind of character. I mean, that's not fair to say, because I know he's a very beloved character right now, but it seems at some point, I mean, because I see the fandom kind of, you know, buzzing about things on my Tumblr all the time, and it seems at some point it stopped being a fun, you know, a really fun cartoon show like everything else. And it turned into like this, like almost like a shonen or shoujo like battle, you know, series, and everyone's fighting. And what can you speak about, like maybe what happened and what point like that shift came?
I don't know, because I mean, they when I first started watching the series, and like, I kind of had to go back and, you know, watch some of the early episodes, because I came in pretty late to the part where things were, you know, where that change had already occurred. And
I see
they kind of like, as from the very first episode, they kind of start feeding you hints as to what the Crystal Gems, who are the three main female protagonists, and then of course there's Steven, and how they're kind of mentoring Steven because he's technically one of them, and he has to be shown, but he's, you know, he's part human, so he has to learn how to use his abilities like them, so he's not a danger to anybody. Not, you know, those, his powers are mainly protective, whereas theirs are a bit more combative. And you learn more about, you know, who they are, a bit more of their past, and how they, you know, came to be on the planet Earth, how they, how one of their members, I think their leader, who's named called Rose Quartz, actually came to know Steven's father, and how they developed a relationship and then eventually resulted in Steven's birth. And then, you know, obviously the repercussions of where the Crystal Gems came from, and how it's, but they're, you know, it involves the planet and so forth, and how it's, you know, it just generally builds and builds and builds upon itself until it actually is developing into a pretty interesting story.
That's fantastic, because, I mean, personally, that's something that I've wanted in cartoons for a long time, like a continuous story. That was part of why I got into manga and anime series when I was, you know, getting to be about 12, 13, was because, you know, hey, episodes of Fairly Old Parents are fun, but mm-hmm. you get to a certain age where you want to follow a story.
Yeah.
And it's really cool that, you know, audiences of that age are being offered that now. And also something with Steven Universe that has happened, which is really, really, really cool, is that it seems to have a very strong understanding of what the audience wants out of gender representation.
Oh yeah, there's a big yeah. thing with that.
And there seems to be a big like LGBT following. Can you talk about how that is in the show? Because I haven't seen it, and I just wondered how that actually manifests in the program.
It's kind of fascinating because they I think they get away with it because of the fact that the Crystal Gems, the female characters are not really, since they're not human, but they take the appearance, like some of the appearance of humans. But they're actually genderless. They just choose to have female forms, and they can change these forms on a whim. So basically, you could have an entire, you know, race of these creatures or these aliens. Spoiler alert, they're aliens. One of the things, like, it's interesting because they're not real physical beings. I mean, what the constructs you're seeing are basically images that they're the gemstone, which is really what they are putting out. And one of the ways that these gems form close relationships with each other is through fusing. So you're combining their forms to form a whole new different entity. And one character in particular is basically a representation of the closest level that, you know, of what that can reach, and when two gems are so close that they will not and do not want to separate from each other. And
wow.
it's kind of brilliant in a way, because it brings out, like, it gives a lot of opportunities to talk about, you know, what is a relationship? What is a romantic relationship between two people or two, you know, feeling creatures?
That's fantastic. I'm really intrigued now, because I'm all for cartoons that have ideas, you know, above their yeah. station, so to speak.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
When I was growing up, it was like we had Johnny Bravo
on TV. Yeah, I know.
Kind of, you know. I mean, the joke was always that he was a twat, but, you know, it was.
Yeah.
You know, we had him like womanizing, you know, all sorts of things, mm-hmm. not just women, but. It's really cool that cartoons, you know, mainstream cartoons can now do that. It's really cool.
I said, it really swept the rug right out from under me. Like I said, literally, I came in late. That's actually the part that I came in on. And I just, it, when you, you get to, we find out that this character is actually a fusion of two individuals, and it has been for a long time. You just, and you see, it's like a, two looking like female looking characters, and you know, they're so happy to be back in, you know, each other's arms, and they're just, you know, like, and then they fuse and they come into this character, and I'm just like, wow, they did that on a cartoon show. And even so, like, there was another aspect that really drew me to Steven Universe, but is the idea that the fact that since he's part crystal, you know, he's part gem, the fact that he can even be, was that they delved into that a little bit of how his mother was actually able to create him and actually had to give up basically her identity in order for him to be born. And how, you know, her loss the fact that she had to do that weighs heavily on the other, you know, three main protagonists, but they still raise him, they still take care of him, they still love him, and, you know, try to help him, you know, understand what he is, and, but it's still, like, even though, despite that, they don't, you know, her loss still weighs heavily on them, one character in particular, who, is still trying to deal with that. And she'll have moments where she'll, like, break into she'll have an episode where she'll be reminiscing about, you know, her past with Rose. And it just gets really, really, really heartfelt and sad and makes me cry.
That's really heavy. That's amazing because, yeah. As I say, I only really saw the first few episodes and it seemed to be very gag-based sort of setup. And, you know, it, like a reset button show,
mm-hmm.
You know, so... is that how? Does it still have elements of that, or is it now just full continuity, catch up? You know, you can't miss an episode at all.
Oh no, there are still plenty of there's still plenty of gags, and there's still episodes where it does feel very episodic. Like you could, you know, you watch it, and then it'll have a little self-contained story, and then it'll be over within the very short episode time limit that it has. But at the same, you know, still. Despite that, at least when they, you know, start getting further into the story, they'll start, you know, with those self-contained stories, they'll add little snippets or hints of a plot thread that is revealed later on in another episode.
That's great. I mean, it's really cool that they're being given the license to do that.
Mm-hmm.
As great as really, because I think people have been trying to do that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with kids shows. I think networks and studios have been really reluctant.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what the what it will try next, and I'm even with just the episodes that are out right now. Like, if I'm really just want to kind of feel good and just have like watch something that's on, you know, you just need to watch something, I'll always put on like a 15 minute episode and. Just see, like, maybe one that I haven't watched yet or haven't had the opportunity to see and just enjoy it. Because it's very fun. It's got beautiful colors, great environments. I mean, I'm
oh, yeah, I follow all the designers setting. On Tumblr. They're fantastic. Kevin Dart and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm really nostalgic for the locale, too, because I heard that, I think the show's creator, Rebecca Sugar, I think her name is.
Yeah,
The Beach City, which is the setting for the series where they live, is kind of like a shout out to Delaware beaches, which I've gone to since I was a kid. So I'm kind of very just like looking at it and just like that does kind of look like a bit like a combination of the various like beaches like in Dewey or Rehoboth and stuff like that.
Awesome.
But yeah,
I'm gonna check that out now. You told me.
Yeah, get back to me on your thoughts about it because I'd love to have that more about this conversation.
Yeah,
yeah. Everything pretty much.
Once I can find the time. Oh, there is one more tiny, tiny, tiny little thing that is really tiny that I want to talk about.
All right.
Basically, turns out Studio Ghibli isn't totally dead. They did a couple of commercials. Not really.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So. Studio Ghibli proper did actually do a commercial. Katsuya Kondo, who is an animator who's been at Ghibli since Kiki's Delivery Service, and he's been like Miyazaki's right-hand man for years and years and years. He did a really cute, quick commercial for Taiko no Tatsujin, the like drumming game.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's really cute. It's just like a little rat kind of running around and jumping into drums. I mean, like, Ghibli have done commercials for as long as they've done movies.
They did one with a little cat a little while ago as well. I can't remember what it's for.
Yeah, it was for... I think it was for an insurance film or something. But yeah, it's kind of in that style of like, you know, like really calligraphic sort of lines. Yes. Kind of is made to look like it was drawn on a canvas. But yeah, it's kind of interesting because it kind of lets you know the lights are still on somewhere at the studio and maybe they're not.
As long as they're still doing what they love doing, I don't care what it is, whether it be commercials or whatever. As long as they're still going, that's enough for me.
As long as Miyazaki's still alive. There was another really interesting tidbit I saw. Apparently Miyazaki's working on a CG short. Apparently Gorō Miyazaki, his son.
Yeah.
You know, who's directed Tales from Earthsea and
Poppy Hill.
And more recently, TV series Ronya the Robber's Daughter.
Yeah. Which, the one that hasn't made it to the West yet.
Yeah, probably for...
somehow.
Well, you should see it, and then maybe you realise why. But he let it slip in an interview that Miyazaki is working on a CG short. So it's really not clear where that's going to pop up. Most likely the Ghibli Museum, where all of his shorts are. So, you know, pretty much, you know, as good as unreleased to the rest of the world.
Balls.
But yeah, I just thought that was kind of cool to see.
That is pretty neat.
Yeah. I have been telling people that they're not. People just go around saying that they're dead when there's been no confirmation.
People like drama, Chris. They like drama.
Yeah. There's not a movie in production at Studio Ghibli at the moment. It doesn't necessarily mean there's not going to be one.
I gotta say, it doesn't look good. I mean, I thought that. Hiromasa Yonabashi, who, you know, directed Arrietty and more recently When Marnie Was There. I thought he was going to be the heir to the Miyazaki sort of throne. And then he left. He up sticks and it looks like he's at Studio Ponoc. Is that right?
I think that was someone else.
Oh, yeah, the producer of Princess Kaguya.
He's done that that advert for trains, but supposedly Ghibli still say that he's connected with them. So
okay, well, so, it's like a one-sided relationship then.
Well, I think it's because basically most studios, they don't have permanent staff. What they do is they have people on contract for each project.
Yeah. Well,
Ghibli always kept people on staff, which is unusual. And what's happened is that most people who are on staff have now gone on to do other stuff.
I can't blame them. I mean, most Japanese animators are freelance. So it was quite unique what was happening at Ghibli, where you had the older staff who were on salaries rather than, you know, per contract.
Yeah. So it might be the Ghibli are just going to have people on freelance like everyone else.
Maybe. I don't think it looks good for them, but, you know, never say never, obviously.
Well, they got to do what they have to do in order to keep the studio going, I guess. I mean,
I think that Miyazaki's a little bit of a... he's done a bit of self-sabotage in kind of, you know, it's his baby. And I think, you know, if you've seen the documentary that was released a couple of years ago, or I think it was last year, The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness, he was, you know, talking about the studio crumbling and in a very dramatic way that kind of implied he doesn't really see anyone worthy of taking up the mantle. So
he's a grumpy old bugger, though, to be fair.
I think he is. I think also some people don't understand that he has a very, very, very dry sense of humor. And he's not necessarily being totally serious when he says things. Yeah. Anime was a mistake, you know? It's like, you were catching him at a bad moment, probably, when he said that. It's not his fundamental belief, I don't think. But, yeah, anyway, so Ghibli's not dead for now.
Yay!
Yay! Time to go celebrate.
Woo!
You know, in the land of animated short film, I saw a bunch of stuff at this you know, animation lab. Obviously, you know, Adam Elliott.
Oh wow! Yeah, he was really short.
That's right. Yeah, Ernie Biscuit is the name of it, and we also got to see a lot of you know, his early stuff. Brother, Cousin. Have you seen any of those? They're really, really beautiful little shorts.
It's the Australian stop motion guy, isn't it, who did what was it called?
Mary and Max.
That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those early ones are really heart-wrenching. You know, we talked about that before, like anime content that really gets you in the feels.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's unrelenting, isn't he, with his...
He is. Yeah, he's sort of a slave to that type of content too, it seems like, you know, according to his speech. And his speech was wonderful. It really was inspiring. He's a lovely guy. We also saw a bunch of Barry Purvis old stop motion.
Was Barry Purvis there?
He was, and
he's a character as well, isn't he?
You know, I could listen to that man just read the dictionary. He made some comment about how he, you know, was interested in acting at one point, but he was no good. And I
disagree.
Did he
tell you about Nude Days as well?
His what?
He went on like a couple of nude like marathons or something.
Oh, that does not surprise me.
Yeah, he couldn't wait to tell us that stuff. He's,
I wish fantastic. I knew about that beforehand, because I would have asked that.
Yeah, he was actually a tutor at our school for a little bit. So I saw him quite often, and he would tell us all sorts of stories. My favorite thing that he says is stop motion animators have amazing thighs. Because they're constantly kneeling. They're constantly kneeling down to get things, and he keeps on like hitting his thighs and, you know, get good thighs.
He is so entertaining, and but his delivery is fantastic too, you know. I mean, he seems like he comes across as a stage actor to me.
Oh, he's absolutely classic animator as actor, isn't he?
Yes. He is.
I think the last thing of his that I saw was, oh crikey, was it? It wasn't called Cliff and the Shadows. It was called something else. The thing about the guy with the angel wings.
Oh, great for sleep deprivation. Yes, I know. I saw that one.
Yeah. He's an animator that some people might not be aware of, but is really, really worth checking out. He did an amazing short of Shakespeare as well. That's fantastic.
Shoot, yeah, I should have written that down. No, they were. Yeah, it was something else. I mean, yeah, we saw a bunch of his films, and then there was a little bit of a Q&A with them. Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, I saw a ton of stuff this week, but One short film that I absolutely loved was a short called Freshly Cut Grass. I had to write down the name of the company because I'd never heard them before.
It's Irish companies.
Yes, Boulder Media.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Cullen was, I guess, the name of the director. I was unfamiliar with him, but I mean, that short was great.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, you should just watch it. It's a...
I found a trailer. I don't think you can watch it online yet.
Oh, right. Yeah, not yet. But it's got cuteness and darkness.
Oh, boy. Dangerous but awesome combination.
Yes.
Boulder Media are doing the Danger Mouse reboot.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're and they also make Randy Cunningham, Ninth Grade Ninja. I know quite a few people who work there. Really good animators.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I think that probably we've been going on quite a while, and I think probably we should wrap it up about here.
Yeah.
We didn't have time to get in the Twitter questions, I'm afraid, but keep sending them in. You can send them in to at AFA blog, or you can send them via our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/animationforadults, or via the website, which is animationforadults.com. And you can also find us on Tumblr and Pinterest, if that's your kind of thing. So, I think it's now time for us to say goodbye. And I'd like to say a huge thanks to Mr. Dan.
Hello. Hello. Can we do plugs? Plugs.
Yes, yes. No, what I'm getting on to. Yeah, Come on.
I'm joking. I don't have anything
to plug. You don't have anything to plug. What about your Twitter?
You can catch me being grumpy on Twitter at Hamu.
There we go. That'll do. That's fine. Right. Rachel.
Yes. You can bug me on Twitter also at fail2ninja.
Awesome. Thank you, Rachel. And Yvonne?
I'm on Twitter at iSnare_Inc. That's my company name too. So, yeah.
You can also check out iSnare.com. It is .com, is it?
It is.
To see Yvonne's awesome work in the animation and art things. And you can find me at Mr. Christor on Twitter, and also the same via Facebook. And you can follow us all at AFA blog.
Yay!
So thanks everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening if you made it all the way through, and I've managed to edit this all together into some sort of listenable thing. I don't know. This is all in the future. I'll try. So we'll catch you soon, guys. Well, hello there, gentle listeners, and welcome to the AFA podcast, the official podcast of animationforadults.com, the blog for the adult animation aficionado. The blog for the adult animation aficionado. The blog for the adult animation fan. Hey?
Sounds good.
I want to say aficionado, but I can't say it. It's not that hard. I'm saying it now. Aficionado.
Just edit it in there, Biff. It'll work.
Everybody needs just the right amount of fuel to get going in the morning. For some, a nice McDonald's egg and cheese bagel is just enough to do it. Others might prefer a McDonald's bacon egg and cheese bagel. Or perhaps a sausage egg and cheese bagel. And there are those where nothing will do but a hearty McDonald's steak egg and cheese bagel. 4 different breakfast bagels to get you going. Tomorrow morning, give your engine a head start at participating McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
So much to explore at Total Wine and More. Pinot Noirs, Grigios, Champagnes, and Chardonnays. Plus more than 2,500 beers and bourbon barrel-aged. Tequila, rum, scotch, and gin, vermouth that's extra dry. Hard seltzers and single malts, so many for you to try.
Now offering delivery in select markets. See details at totalwine.com/delivery. Drink responsibly, be 21.